In response to a rash of shootings in Milwaukee last week, where 19 people were shot in a five-day period, leaving at least three dead and 16 wounded, Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett has asked Governor Walker for tougher sentencing for illegal gun possession and $500,000 in funds for police overtime. We will talk with a guest in this half hour who says that police overtime won't solve the deeper problems in Milwaukee that are fueling this violence. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is now 7:37 on this Monday, August 12th. And in this half of our state capitol report, we will talk with James Causey, editorial writer and columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. His most recent piece is Milwaukee Shootings Show Our Village is Broken. We'll welcome your questions for him and your suggested solutions to the gun violence in Milwaukee at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And James Causey joins us by telephone, and let me say that it was our fault completely that we had a mix-up in communication as to when you would be on the State Capitol Report. James Causey, thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So, well, what do you mean our village is broken?
Well, you know, we've all heard the saying about, you know, it takes a village to raise a family. Well, you know, over the past couple of decades, I would say, we've had problems with our village, and it's mostly due to the lack of men in the households today. And it's mostly because of that, and it's a lot of reasons because of that lack of jobs, poverty, you know, black males being killed on the streets on a daily basis. It's starting to take its toll and show its ugly face. Mm-hmm. I think what we need to do is we still need to start focusing on families more so than focusing on police to solve a lot of our problems.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. You wrote in that piece that $500,000 worth of police overtime that Mayor Barrett is authorizing might make people feel better or safer, but that having a cop on every block might not make much of a difference. Why not?
Well, I understand from the police perspective and from the mayor's perspective why this makes sense, because it's one of those kind of things to it's knee jerk. You hear that there's a number of shootings in a small area, because most of these shootings are occurring in like the same similar hot spots. So you try to flood the area with police in order to make people feel safe. But in reality, these areas will never feel safe. They could never really completely feel safe. And the people over there know it because these families are so broken, and you have too many kids who are trying to raise themselves and too many kids that are seemingly out of control because they lack that guidance that a strong father or a strong male mentor or a male figure would have provided to keep them on the straight and narrow. For instance, I was on 27th and Burleigh with a group of young men who are trying to stop the violence in neighborhoods that they once terrorized. They're part of this urban gardening initiative where it gives them jobs to turn vacant lots into urban gardens. And so they wanted to go over on 27th and Burleigh to hold up signs and get people to honk if they were interested in stopping the violence. I grew up in the inner city, but I haven't been on 27th and Burleigh on the corner in a long time. But when I was over there, I sort of felt, you could feel like the tension in the air. It was just a lot of stuff going on. You got, you know, high traffic, a lot of young people. You got, you know, a corner liquor store here. You got, you know, a store across the street selling alcohol. You got just all these, it's a lot of commotion and a lot of stuff going on in a really small area. And it's not surprising that, you know, not too long ago, there was a shooting over in that same area like a week and a half ago. But so they were holding up these signs, getting people to honk. And yeah, people were feeling good about that. But the point I'm making is like, when we leave, you know, that area is still going to be the same. And I don't think having a cop walking up and down the street or getting out the cars talking to people is going to be enough. That's part of the issue. Yeah, you know, I think a strong police presence could help if they're working one-on-one with the citizens. But that's just a simple part of the solution. The bigger parts are the parts that, you know, we really need to focus on. And that's creating an educational system that's fair and that teaches and educates our kids so they quit dropping out of school. So we got to try to reach them in different ways. We need to have summer jobs for a lot of these kids who basically say that, you know, they don't have anything to do over the summer. And not only just creating jobs, you got to teach them the skills so they can keep the jobs. Teach them what it means to get up every morning and so you're not late for work. Teach them what it means to work a hard 8 hours or 6 hours or 3 hours that they work. Teach them that, no, it's not okay to talk on your cell phone if you have a customer service job and you have people waiting. Some of these kids, they have to be taught that because they have to see it. But if they never see this, then how do you expect them to act?
Yeah, you know, that column, the column you wrote on the urban gardens, the young man you focused on, it made me want to cry. He knew several of the people who had been shot recently and was, you know, going to funerals of cousins and neighbors every other day, it seemed. And I guess I'm just trying to get an idea on why he is, I guess, avoiding this gun violence while so many of his friends are not.
Well, it's the reason that he's avoiding it now is because he's had some mentors step into his life and try to change his ways. One of those mentors is Muhib Dyer, a community activist here who's part of the Saving Our Sons, I Will Not Die Young campaign, who basically is, you know, we got a lot of soldiers, I like to say, on a ground level, really reaching these youth in schools and providing them the help that they need. But this is the issue here. You know, I wanted people to feel his pain. Just think, he's had relatives shot and killed. He's never really had a relationship with his father. He's had all these other issues, but still, he hasn't received anybody putting their arm around him, telling him it's going to be okay and showing him the way. I mean, when you think about that, when you experience trauma like that and you never have anybody to say or work with you or get you to talk about it, then guess what? If you holding in trauma all the time, it usually comes out pretty angry. And if you're living in a situation or living in an area where you see violence all the time and none of these people are being helped, and it just starts to pile on after a while till you get sucked into the same situation. Now, these three young men that I was that I spent time with, you know, they're, in my opinion, they were all pretty good kids that were on the fence. You know, yeah, they did some things that ended them up in the juvenile system, but they're trying to turn their life around thanks to the help of mentors. But just think about all these kids who see trauma on a daily basis and nobody addresses their issues. I mean, to me, that just seems criminal in itself, because if you don't treat somebody for their trauma, then guess what? If it's never treated, it's usually, most times out of 10, could come out pretty bad or violent on the other end. And we need to start addressing trauma on the front end. When someone sees violence, we need people to come in and, like, work with these young people and tell them, you know, try to make sure that they're okay. I think in hood life, where the experience is to hold in your emotion, don't talk about it, be tough. You often hear these kind of things. Oh, it'll be okay. You know, you wear the T-shirt with somebody that died on it to the funeral, and then you try to act like nothing ever happened the next day. But no, you know, speaking for me personally, when my dog died, I was dealing with trauma for like 2 weeks. It took me 2 weeks to get okay. So imagine what it's like to lose a brother, a sister, a cousin, a neighbor, a classmate, or even, you know, not never ever knowing your father or having a relationship with him, or seeing your mother beaten and you feel like you're helpless to do anything about it. Over time, you start to get bitter. It makes you angry. And that's what we're dealing with today.
Let me bring a caller in right away on this. Tom in Madison is with us. Hello, Tom.
Good morning to both of you. I've heard the guest, Mr. Gesser, I can't recall his name, but
Causey.
I find it very interesting and compelling, and I've always gone and done some research after I've listened to you on the show, and I appreciate it. But and you kind of just touched on it a little bit, but Why are these kids shooting each other? Why are these people getting pregnant at such a higher rate than other communities? I think poverty is, and social poverty is the root of a lot of this, but we've been throwing so much money at it for years, and it's not changing. The responsibility, how can we address these issues of teenage pregnancy and violence? The schools, I understand.
Yeah.
It's a tough point for me to make, but we just haven't seen a great improvement. The people that are improving at a higher rate than before. It just seems that there's just more people, first of all.
Tom, thank you very much. But because we're coming up on the break, and I thought you wanted to focus exclusively on why are young black men shooting each other specifically, let me pose that question to James Causey. And a comment on we've been throwing money at this problem for years and nothing changes, according to our caller.
Well, real quick, I think you prey on people who look the most like you. I mean, we're living one of the most segregated cities in the nation. So why do black men kill black men? Because they live right next door to black men. They see black men right in their neighborhood. So if it was a more diverse community, it probably wouldn't be that way. But it's a hyper-segregated city. And when you live in hyper-segregation, I mean, that tends to be what you get. White people kill white people. Black people kill black people.
Yeah,
it's really that simple.
Yeah. Well, what about the contention that we've been spending money at it? Yeah.
Well, I think we have been putting money at it. I just don't think it's been wise in a number of ways. If I could just briefly touch on the teen pregnancy issue, well, teen pregnancy is going down because they figured out an effective way to address it by getting more organizations involved in it. I think that's what we need to do with our young black boys. I don't think we address the young black boys issue in the same way that we address teenage pregnancy. If you look at all the advertising campaigns, if you look at all the different organizations involved in a teen pregnancy movement to get it to come down, that was a successful program because teen pregnancy across the nation is down, and it's really down here in our city. Because we at one time, we once led the nation in teenage pregnancy. Now we're really down, and we're on pace of reaching our goal. I think the same type of steps need to be taken in addressing black boys, but it's going to take more of a grassroots effort where it's going to take more men to get involved in these men's lives, either teaching fathers how to be better fathers, maybe having more mentors come into the schools and talk to these youth and take them under their wing. It's going to take companies, instead of hiring two or three interns, maybe taking on 10 interns and trying to teach them the way and showing them the skill sets that it takes to get goals accomplished and how to become young men. It's going to take more of a community-based situation. And I agree that we threw a lot of money at it. I just don't think the money has been thrown at the situation wisely, which explains the $500,000 into police overtime. I'm pretty sure if we have some real serious conversations about it, we could put that money into programs that work and addresses the issues that a lot of these young black boys are going through.
We're talking with James Causey. He is an editorial writer, columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. His most one of his recent pieces is Milwaukee Shootings Show Our Village Is Broken, talking about the recent gun violence in Milwaukee. 19 people shot in a 5-day period, leaving at least three dead, 16 wounded, talking about the roots of this violence and the solutions. And we're welcoming your questions and your thoughts at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. The mayor of Milwaukee wants tougher sentencing for illegal gun possession and $500,000 for police overtime. Do you think that the police overtime will help? What about tougher sentencing? Or what about what our guest is saying, that community efforts are the way to safer neighborhoods? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the State Capitol Report on the Ideas Network. This is our State Capitol Report. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine talking with James Causey, who is a columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talking about the recent rash of shootings in Milwaukee and what community and state leaders are proposing as solutions and what James Causey thinks would be a better way. We should talk a little bit about Governor Walker said he did not want to cast the city of Milwaukee in a violent light. He said that he thinks the vast majority of the city is a safe place to live. How do we go about solving the gun violence problem that we're witnessing right now without defining Milwaukee by that problem, James Causey?
Well, I mean, of course, a majority of the state is a safe place. I agree with him on that, but, I mean, that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a city that's the largest city in the state, that has the largest minority population, and has one of the highest poverty rates. So when you look at that, I think he needs to be on board, just like all politicians need to be on board, in creating an environment to bring in more jobs to our city. I mean, it sounds simple, like jobs will cure all of this. Even when we had a booming economy, we still had some violence. I'm not saying that, again, that that's going to cure a lot of our ills, but if you don't have jobs, when you have blocks and blocks of areas in Milwaukee where people do not work and people have no hope, and there's a lot of trauma in these areas and a lot of police presence is in this area, and you direct so much attention to these areas, why not try to figure out what's wrong and try to fix these areas that's been plagued for years and years? Why not try to go after that and figure out how we could fix that? Because, you know, while a majority of the state may be doing well as far as, you know, the lack of violence, well, we have pockets in right here in our city, in Milwaukee, that are you wouldn't want your kids to live in. And I think that's a problem. Where you wouldn't even feel safe walking in, you know, where I even felt uncomfortable being in, and I'm from here. So I think when you have areas like that, I think, you know, as a politician, wouldn't it be better to say that our entire state is safe instead of a majority of our state is safe?
Yeah.
That would be my opinion.
Senator Alberta Darling is drafting a bill that would create a 3-year mandatory minimum sentence for anyone illegally in the possession of a firearm. Is that something you think would have any effect?
I think it would. Honestly, it worked in New York. And we've seen a dramatic drop in crime, but we shouldn't think that just changing the gun law per se is just going to be this thing that fixes our gun problem. I think it's going to have some impact. I don't know if it'll have a world, it'll change the situation completely, because it won't. But I think it's a step in the right direction. Too many bad people have guns. And right now, they could carry a gun and get slapped with a misdemeanor. And we need to change their mindset to where it becomes where they feel safer not owning a gun. But right now, when I interviewed this kid for my piece, he said at 16, he carried a gun because he had to feel safe. I could sort of understand why. He's seen people get shot. He explained to me a situation where he was just walking down a block with his cousin, and some guys on the porch start shooting at a guy, some guys in a car, and he was caught in crossfire. So he had to duck behind some cars, and luckily no one was injured in that. But that's how quickly things could escalate where he lives. Now, I don't know how you change that mindset where people feel safer not carrying a gun than carrying a gun. But, I mean, maybe this law may get one or two people to say, you know what, it's not worth it. I don't want to do no more jail time. I don't want to go to jail. Let me just leave a gun at home or not even have one. It may encourage some, but I don't think a majority of people will follow suit.
Well, we have many callers and very little time. Kathy in Lake Tomahawk, may I ask you to be as brief as possible with your comment?
Absolutely. Mr. Causey, I so appreciate your comments. I'm an outpatient psychotherapist, and I used to work in the Milwaukee area, specifically working with a lot of adjudicated delinquent teenagers, and you are absolutely dead on when you're talking about the issue of treating trauma. It's not about what behavior is and treating behavior. It's what's driving the behavior, and that's absolutely what is the core, and that's why it, when people talk about that it's not being effective, we're not putting the money where we need to put the money, which is treating the trauma, which is essentially treating the PTSD.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Kathy. We have just a minute. James Causey, maybe a quick react to that, but I also want to know if you're optimistic that the city and the state can successfully tackle this problem.
As far as the PTSD, I agree 100%. When soldiers come home from combat, they receive treatment. They're debriefed. They talk to psychiatrists and psychologists, and they go through a debriefing process. Our kids are, some of our kids are dealing with in war zone situations every day, and they're told to get over it. And they're told to act right in school. You know, why didn't you turn in your homework? Well, my lights aren't turned on. And guess what? I seen my mother beaten last night. But those issues aren't addressed. So I agree with the commenter 100%. As far as being optimistic, I have to be. If I was to say that this was a lost cause, then I will move. And I don't plan on moving anytime soon. I think this is a situation that could be fixed, but it's going to take leadership. And when I say leadership, it doesn't require being knee-jerk. It requires just hopping in and figuring out what the problems are and fixing them.
Well, we're going to leave it there for now, and we want to thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
James Causey writes for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Thanks very much to Christy Taylor and to Justin Williams for producing and directing this show. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.